It's just past 7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. My name's Brian Edwards-Tieker.
And I'm Kat Brooks, and it is time for Impeachment Watch. We are going to turn our attention now to Washington, D.C. with Mitch Deseritz. Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning, Kat Brooks. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Mitch.
All right, let's dive right in. Let's start with who is on deck for today and who didn't show up, I guess, is really the question.
So you are referring to the depositions that are still occurring this week between the three House committees, House Intelligence, House Foreign Affairs, and Government Oversight Committee that have been doing these depositions behind closed doors. This is the last week that they have scheduled depositions. It's potential next week, even though we haven't heard yet, maybe even the week after, we'll get to the point of having open hearings that we can broadcast. And I suspect we will broadcast a good number of them on KPFA. So, Kat, so far this very moment, and I'm just returning from the room where they're holding these closed depositions called the SCIF. And I say returning from the room, I really mean just outside of the room waiting for any news to come out, who showed up, seeing somebody walk in, walk out. And as of right now, there are two people who were supposed to show up today to give depositions. They are Michael Duffy, who is a top official at the Office of Management and Budget, and also Wells Griffith, who is the National Security Council energy expert. These two individuals are scheduled to give their depositions today. So far, they haven't shown up. Now, most of the time, people show up either East Coast time speaking, either at 9 or 9:30 in the morning, and I stayed until about 9:55 until I wanted to find a quiet place to join you all, and no one had shown up. Now, we didn't get word from Adam Schiff or even any of the Republicans of what was going on so far, so it's possible, I suppose, that somebody will show up later in the day, but as of now, and everyone's been coming in the morning, as of now, no one has shown up. If that persists throughout the day, this will be the second day in a row in which no White House or, let's just say, executive branch administration officials have shown up to testify in these depositions. We have scheduled depositions for the rest of this week, including on Thursday, when former National Security Advisor John Bolton has been asked to come give a deposition. We'll have to wait to see if he shows up or not. I doubt he'll show up, at least on Thursday, but it's not Thursday yet, so we still have to wait. But it's possible, Kat, that we are at a position now in which maybe nobody shows up for the rest of the week.
Mitch, let's talk about Duffy a little bit. He's particularly important because he oversees the approval and release of U.S. assistance to foreign countries, correct?
Yeah. And this gets to, as well as what happened yesterday, Kat, again, Duffy is with the Office of Management and Budget. Yesterday, two officials of the Office of Management and Budget also did not show up to give their depositions. And this is significant because the Office of Management and Budget, we went over it a little bit yesterday, is basically this obscure agency within the executive branch of government that manages the government. And part of that management is also allocating the funds. And that includes the allocation of the funds of the $391 million in military aid that was scheduled to go to Ukraine, which Mick Mulvaney, White House Chief of Staff, reportedly had asked the Office of Management and Budget to hold up, to not go through with. And, of course, we know that Gordon Sondland, whose transcript is supposed to be released from when he gave his deposition, had indicated, and others, many of others indicated that that $391 million in military aid would be dependent on Ukraine launching, at least announcing that it would launch an investigation into the Bidens and the theft of the DNC emails in 2016. So it's interesting about the Office of Management and Budget, Kat, is it's the only agency so far that has been requested from these House committees to give depositions that no one so far from the Office of Management and Budget has given depositions. Now, you've had members of the National Security Council who have come and other members who have not come. Same thing from the State Department. But when it comes to the Office of Management and Budget, not a single official so far has appeared to give their deposition.
And the acting director of the Office of Management and Budget, Russ Vaught, did say that their office would not cooperate with the probe. So along those lines, Mitch, aside from board reporters, what does it mean when people don't show up for these things?
Well, it means nothing really happens. I mean, it's funny. I sent you a photo this morning showing you just a bunch of us just sitting around with our on our phones and laptops open waiting for something to happen, and nothing happened this entire morning, which is the first time I've seen that since I've been here. Even though no one showed up yesterday to testify, lawmakers were still coming out and talking to the press. That hadn't happened, at least while I was there. It may have happened since I have left to join you, but it hadn't happened yet. I guess one interesting thing, one person we talked about, Kat, who did not appear yesterday for the deposition, who's important in all of this, is John Eisenberg. John Eisenberg is the White House attorney who oversees the National Security Council. We learned from Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, according to Vindman's testimony, that after Vindman was so alarmed by Trump asking Ukraine to investigate the Bidens, that he went to John Eisenberg to tell him about it. John Eisenberg, according to Alexander Vindman, then began the process of removing the record of that phone call between Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky from a computer server that they usually store foreign phone calls with foreign leaders into a more secure server in which less people would have access to. So John Eisenberg did not appear yesterday to give his deposition, since yesterday afternoon his attorney said they are going to wait and see what happens to Charles Kupperman's case. Charles Kupperman is the was the former top advisor to John Bolton when John Bolton was the national security advisor. Charles Kupperman is the one who was subpoenaed by the House and then blocked by the White House. And he's the one that went to a federal judge to say, who do I obey, right? These are conflicting laws here. Who do I obey? This, again, is where it gets tricky with the separation of powers. And so the federal judge said that he will hear oral arguments on December 10th on what he should do. So John Eisenberg's attorney is saying, we're waiting to see what happens in that case. And I suspect that's what a lot of people who are not now showing up to give depositions are also going to say. We want to see what happens in the courts before we move forward and participate. So again, oral argument is December 10th. That does not mean that we're going to get a decision on December 10th, right? It could come even after that. We know that the House is moving forward even without the depositions, even without these people, even testifying perhaps in an open setting towards, you know, the impeachment process. So does that mean that they'll never get their day in front of Congress? Not necessarily. It's possible that, let's say, by that point, the House Intelligence Committee has already wrapped up its public hearings and has moved its report and its findings to the House Judiciary Committee, which is tasked with writing articles of impeachment. Well, if the House Judiciary Committee is still in the middle of its work, it could still summon these same individuals to come testify to the House Judiciary Committee. But let's say we don't get a decision and appeals and all this stuff happens. Let's say we don't get a decision that these individuals are supposed to testify until after even the impeachment of Donald Trump happens in the House of Representatives. Well, they could still be called as witnesses in a Senate trial, which is still possible. The Senate trial for Bill Clinton. Now, we've only had two Senate trials in the history of a president concerning impeachment in the history of the country: 1868 with Andrew Johnson, and then 1998 with Bill Clinton. The trial with Bill Clinton lasted an entire month. There are moments through that process that were even behind closed doors. It's not all necessarily going to be open to the public. And they did call witnesses when they had the trial for Bill Clinton. So it's possible that these individuals who are refusing to show up now at some point will still show up before Congress.
Mitch, are any of the actions that John Eisenberg is alleged to have taken in terms of moving the transcripts, anything that he's done that could later on down the road be deemed illegal?
I don't know. Yeah, this is one of the times where I just don't know the answer if that would
be stumped
illegal or not. I mean, if I were to think it through, I guess I would say the president has the ultimate authority of what's classified and what's not classified. And so if it was done at all in connection with the president, maybe not. But I'm just speculating there, Kat.
Okay. So one of the things that Republicans have been clamoring about since this whole process started, the impeachment inquiry, is access to what was said. And some transcripts have started to be released. Yesterday, the transcript of Marie Yovanovitch, the U.S. ambassador to the Ukraine, her transcript was released. What were the big takeaways from that?
Yeah, Michael McKinley, who is the top aide to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's transcript, was also released yesterday. And then today, we could talk about today in a moment, we're going to get two more transcripts that are supposed to be released. But it seems like the big takeaway from Marie Yovanovitch, who was the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who was recalled by Donald Trump, who had reportedly an adversarial relationship with the general prosecutor of Ukraine, who wanted her out as well. The same prosecutor that Trump and Giuliani wanted to investigate the Bidens. The big takeaway from her testimony that was released so far, and look, it's over 360 pages, so I'm not going to tell you I've read through all of it, but it seems like what's making the biggest waves is her fear, actually, of retaliation against her. And in particular, after the transcript of the phone call between Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky, after she saw that transcript, after she had already been recalled as ambassador, in the transcript, you see, and you know, this is released from the president himself, that he calls her bad news and that she's going to be going through some things.
Right.
Right. Now, maybe that's his way of saying, I'm going to recall her. You know, I don't know, but it's kind of scary to hear something like that. And then put it in context to what happened to her before she was recalled. She was told by top Ukrainian officials, in particular, the Secretary of the Interior for Ukraine, that Rudy Giuliani was after her and that she should watch her back and that they were spreading rumors and false accusations against Marie Yovanovitch, and that even Sean Hannity of Fox News was in on all of this. So put it in that context. Now, Sean Hannity denied all of this yesterday on his program. I was watching it. But put that all in context, then to hear that one president tells the other president, you know, she'll be going through some things. She says she still fears for her safety after that.
Well, something else that was striking that came directly from the transcript is the haste with which she was removed from her post, getting a call from her superior saying, take the next train out, next plane out. And with no explanation, and to your point, that her safety was at risk. And when she asked my physical safety, their superior was like, well, no, I don't think so, but just your safety.
We don't think so, but, you know, the words are kind of crazy, so.
Right, so maybe you should go anyway.
And then, just in case.
And then the less, you know, dangerous, but maybe more amusing, for lack of a better word, thing that was revealed was that that she was told by Sunderland to, if she wanted to save her job, to tweet out praise about the president.
Yeah, he said something to the likes of "Go big or get out."
Right.
And followed up with, you know, I guess what he meant by that was tweet something nice about the president.
He likes praise.
I think. Yeah, well, yeah, I think we know that about Donald Trump. You know, and this is where Michael McKinley's testimony also comes in, and his deposition, the transcript of his deposition, was released yesterday as well. Michael McKinley was the top aide to Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, who resigned, and this is what we learned, because Mike Pompeo refused to say anything nice about Marie Yovanovitch. And in other words, he refused to come out and back her as Secretary of State, as head of the Department the State Department. As head of that department, your boss refused to come out and back you in any way whatsoever. And Mike Pompeo, before on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos, said that he had never heard anything from Michael McKinley asking him to back up Marie Yovanovitch. Michael McKinley testified in the closed deposition that he had asked specifically and straightforward three separate times for Mike Pompeo to do something. And after the third time he did it was with his resignation, in which he, you know, Mike Pompeo called him and said, why are you resigning? Well, here's why I'm resigning, because you're refusing to back up Marie Yovanovitch and all of this. And so, you know, it's just one person's word against another, but this testimony certainly seems pretty damning for Mike Pompeo.
Well, somebody's lying, and that would include perhaps Donald Trump saying that he does not know who Lev Parnas is, but all may be revealed and soon, yes?
So, who is Lev Parnas? It gets hard. There's a lot of names. You know, this is like a serious exam. Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman are described as two associates to Rudy Giuliani, and they were arrested a little over a month ago as they were trying to leave the country at Dulles Airport here in Washington, D.C., and they were charged with campaign finance violations. In other words, they were funneling foreign money into the elections here. I don't know if that's actually connected to this situation with Ukraine and what level Rudy Giuliani had any involvement in it. I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know if anyone really does at this point. But Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman were also implicit with Rudy Giuliani in trying to smear the ambassador to Ukraine at the time, who we were just talking about, Marie Yovanovitch. And they were a part of that campaign to push her out and to kind of smear her name in Ukraine. And so Lev Parnas, at first, both of them, Igor Fruman and Lev Parnas, had refused to cooperate with the congressional inquiry that's happening concerning impeachment. Well, the attorney for Lev Parnas has now indicated that Parnas is willing to work with the inquiry and to talk to congressional investigators. My reading of it is, and this is what's been reported, this isn't my source, but what's been reported in published newspapers is that he was really angry that Trump said he had no idea who he was. And that hurt him. And that's part of the reason why he has changed his willingness to cooperate with Congress.
Because there couldn't be any possibility of quid pro quo here, right? Like, one has absolutely nothing to do with the other. His legal issues with campaign finance violations and providing testimony that could corroborate some things that the Dems are trying to figure out about Trump and Ukraine.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. It might not. I don't know what he and Igor Fruman, what they were accused of, again, which was funneling campaign funds, foreign campaign funds, foreign entities. It's against the law for foreign entities to make campaign contributions. The allegations against them is that they were funneling funds for that very purpose here in the United States. Is there a connection to the situation with Ukraine getting rid of Marie Yovanovitch as well as trying to get these investigations? I don't know the answer to that. It might be out there. I don't know it.
All right, Mitch Jezeris, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much, and I hope you get some excitement up there soon.
Yeah, Kat, thank you. I'll be looking for it.
Bye, Mitch.
Bye-bye.
That is Mitch Jezeris, the host of KPFA's Letters and Politics. He's in Washington, D.C., covering the impeachment proceedings.
I think to your question, I don't think you get to trade off lesser charges with prosecutors in exchange for cooperating with Congress, right?
That's what they're two different arms of government. That's what I was asking, right? Could they have said, you know how they showed cops on the TV saying, you know, tell us what you know and we'll work with you? That couldn't happen here, right?
Well, I'm like trying to think it through in my head, and I guess if prosecutors wanted to see you cooperate or be useful to Congress, which is kind of, you know, outside their wheelhouse, what they could kind of negotiate with you is a way to put things on the public record that would then be useful to Congress. But it just seems like two different arms of government that wouldn't be like explicitly working together.
I think so. I'd be interested in what a legal mind had to say, and I guess we'll see how it all plays out as the White House turns.
But that is like a very, you know, consequential decision in the prosecution is like, what do you admit to publicly? What do you testify to in a way that's in a court document versus just kind of pleading out and staying out of the light?
Right.
And really consequential in this case. I'm glad you took us down that path. We should explore that in an upcoming segment.
I agree.